Agriculture is one of Wisconsin's largest industries, and it creates billions of dollars in revenue within our state. And now farmers in Wisconsin are watching, as farmers across the country are watching, Congress as they slowly craft what will be the 2012 Farm Bill. That's a bill that offers subsidies to farmers, some crop insurance programs, and a whole number of other things. It's a massive piece of legislation worth $1 trillion. But Congress needs to act soon because some programs under the current Farm Bill that we're operating under right now are set to expire this fall. So this hour, on a special edition of Wisconsin Public Radio Regional Programs, The West Side and Route 51, we'll look at the debate over the 2012 Farm Bill with representatives from two of Wisconsin's largest farming groups. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined now in studio by Jim Holt. Jim is a board member with the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Jim Holt, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for inviting me.
Our pleasure. And I'm also joined by Kara Slaughter, and Kara is the Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Kara Slaughter, thank you so much for stopping by as well.
Thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
There, I turned your mic on now. So,
thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
It's our pleasure, and I apologize for the glitch there. And it wouldn't be live radio without live call-ins from farmers and other interested parties in our listening areas. What do you think of the Senate's version of the 2012 Farm Bill? Is it reform? Have you seen any of the bullet points from the U.S. House's version yet? Give us a call at 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. Whether you're calling from the Wausau region or from the Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley region. And with that, let's kind of get into some of the nuts and bolts, I guess, or some of the basics. And Jim Holt, I'm going to ask you first to help those non-farmers, myself included, who might not be familiar with the U.S. Farm Bill. What is it and why is it such a big deal for farmers and for agriculture in the Wisconsin and the rest of the U.S.?
Well, the U.S. Congress has had some sort of a farm bill since the 30s, and most of the provisions that we've lived with in the last number of years were probably crafted in some of them beginning in the 40s, 50s, and on through time. So it has a longstanding history of being in place. One point that is easily overlooked sometimes is that even though the Farm Bill is a large bill and includes numbers, I think you said it, approaching $1 trillion, over 80% of that really is unrelated to farming, in that it's assistance programs, much of it food stamps and stuff. So sometimes the billing on the volume of it gets to be a little bit overdone because it's not all related to agriculture, certainly not all related to public production agriculture. So,
and is that, does that kind of give farming a bad name? I mean, just think that there's all this money going to subsidy programs?
It has that potential if you don't have an understanding of the different programs that are included in the, quote, Farm Bill.
Food stamps, for one.
Correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Kara Slaughter, so far we've got a Senate version of the 2012 Farm Bill, but that will more than likely change before it becomes law. What do you like about the Farm Bill recently passed by the Senate?
There were a couple of amendments that we were very pleased to see. One was what we call conservation compliance. That is the notion that when farmers receive a benefit, in this case, either crop insurance, a subsidy on their crop insurance, or other sorts of payments, they agree to comply with minimum soil and water conservation standards. And this is a provision that is widely accepted by farmers in the U.S. According to a recent poll, nearly 2-1 farmers said, we think it's reasonable that some minimum conservation compliance standards are included in the Farm Bill. So we were pleased to see that amendment. We were also pleased to see some payment limitations included in the Senate version. What those payment limitations said was that those who have an adjusted gross income of $750,000 or above are not eligible to receive federal subsidies. And this seems like a common sense measure as well. Both of our senators in Wisconsin voted in favor of those payment limitations. It's a cost-saving measure, and it's also a way to make sure that the Farm Bill is a safety net for those who need it.
Now, that poll that you mentioned, that was paid for by the Wisconsin or the National Farmers Union organization, was it not?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Jim Holt, same question to you. I mean, what about the Senate version stands out to you? What do you like, and maybe what don't you like?
I think the things that we like is that it is gone down the road of the general concept that less government involvement in farming is a better thing. We have a long history of having direct payments on the crop side. In the Senate bill, those are eliminated, and we support that.
What is a direct payment? I mean, what does that mean?
A direct payment is a part of a program that's been in place a long time whereby farmers, by signing up and complying with provisions of things such as the conservation compliance, which Kara mentioned, you receive a number of dollars per acre related to your yields over time. And it's just a flat-out check that comes to the farmers in the mail. It's made on a large range of commodities, some corn, soybeans, sorghum, oats, cotton, rice, sugar. I mean, it's a large volume of money. And particularly with the change in commodity prices in the last few years, where it's been a very positive move for most farmers, it seems to be time for these payments to be gone.
Okay. So then what replaces them?
Well, as was mentioned earlier, there's a bigger emphasis on insurance products. In other words, farmers take a great deal of risk as they plant a crop or as they care for livestock, and that risk can be heavily influenced by changes in price and by weather. And through a larger role by the government in sponsoring these insurance programs and subsidizing their costs also, there's more tools available to farmers, for farmers, to manage their risk but still make those management decisions themselves as opposed to some government program making them. And that's one of the things, the concepts that we really I think is a big improvement.
And Kara Slaughter, do you agree with that? Is it time for the direct payment to go?
Absolutely. We were pleased with that development. The direct payments were just getting harder and harder to defend when in a time of high commodity prices, those payments that were going to farmers, regardless of the price of commodities, and in fact, regardless of what they were growing today on those acres, just didn't make any sense anymore. Okay. And the move toward crop insurance makes a lot of sense. One of the things that we're keeping an eye on in the details of how crop insurance plays out is that there is a danger in a period of an extended period of low prices that crop insurance won't provide that safety net that farmers need. And so one of the things that we're monitoring is to make sure that in periods of extended low prices, we have a mechanism for helping farmers out.
And what kind of a mechanism would that be?
It would be something like a minimum price or an alteration in the way that crop insurance is calculated, because crop insurance is calculated based on the past, say, 5 years mm-hmm. of prices. Well, if you have a long dip in prices, then a time horizon of just 5 years isn't going to get you to a number that'll actually cover a cost of production.
Sure. Now, Jim Holt, it seems like every time that, and we've already spoke a little bit about this, every time that Congress debates a farm bill, there's a lot of talk about subsidies to farmers and, you know, myths, misnomers, whatever. The Senate version of the 2012 farm bill is touting some real reform in that it eliminates the direct subsidies like you spoke of.
Yes.
Is it true reform, or do we need to go farther with this type of idea of getting government, I guess, out of farming?
Well, I think the phrase getting government out of farming is maybe a little bit of utopia, because that is not likely to happen. Our federal government has an interest in having an adequate food supply for all of our people, and so I don't think that is an end goal of anybody, really. But our organization feels that a lower level of influence from the government gives farmers the opportunity to manage their operations, to produce food the way the consumer wants it delivered, whether it might be in the conventional method or through the different situations where we see food courts coming up, the farmers markets. All those, the whole range of things should be available to the consumer and let the consumer tell the farmer how they want it delivered. And so our concept for a long time has been less government is better, and so we're seeing the beginning of that, I believe.
And Kara Slaughter, less government, better in farming, or is there a point where we can get a little too far, or are there certain Are there certain programs and protections that need to remain for maybe small farmers versus large farmers?
Well, like Jim said, there are some unique aspects of agriculture that make a government program, a government safety net, make sense. Farmers are subject for their livelihood on sunshine and rain, and we know that more than ever this year. I was in Douglas, Bayfield, Ashland counties last week, where farmers haven't even gotten into their fields to plant because their crops are underwater, their fields are underwater. And here in the southern part of the state, we have crops that are withering. So because food is kind of one of those essential commodities, there's always going to be a role for the government. That being said, what we have now is a system where we have, say, 10% of the farmers receiving 60% of the benefit from federal crop subsidies. That needs to change. And that's where payment limitations come in, and also shifting the focus of our federal farm programs, for example, to focus on beginning farmers. One of the biggest impediments to farmers getting started in farming is the high cost of land. Mm-hmm. And there is an amendment that has been, or a proposal on the House side, an amendment that was passed on the Senate side to provide specific support to beginning farmers and ranchers. And we can't emphasize enough how important that is. And Farmers Union really supports those initiatives to support beginning farmers and ranchers because it is a hard business to get into.
Right. And what about, but I'll ask both of you, it's hard to get into it, but it also can be hard to keep generations down the line, keep their interest in it. Jim Holt.
Yes, that is always a challenge. It's a profession that requires quite a bit of physical work at times, also a great deal of management to effectively run a business that over time has gotten to be larger and larger. And so I think it bears a good sense for us to continue to support other programs related to agriculture, like the BOAG programs in our schools that offer a wide range of agricultural experiences. I think both our organizations have for a long time supported those and encouraged those, and so that we give opportunities to young people and give them experiences that would lead to their interest and success in agriculture.
All right. And with that, we're talking about the Senate version of the 2012 Farm Bill and what that means for farmers in Wisconsin. You can join in the discussion by calling 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. And we'll pick it up again when we return after this break. You're listening to a special joint edition of Wisconsin Public Radio regional programs, the West Side, based in western Wisconsin, and Route 51, based in the Wausau area, central Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. Thank you for joining us. We're talking about the Senate's passage of their version of the 2012 Farm Bill this hour and what the response might be from the U.S. House. We'll get into that in just a bit. And what it all means for farmers in Wisconsin. We're joined by Kara Slaughter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union and Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. And we'd like to hear from you, farmers, listeners in general. Give us a call at 800-228-5615. What do you think about the Farm Bill? Again, the number is 800-228-5615, and you can also leave a question or a comment on the West Side Facebook page. Now, one of the issues that keeps coming up, at least in articles that I was looking at researching the program, is the Dairy Security Act. And I'm not sure whether either of you would deem it controversial, but there seems to be some debate over it. And it's meant to protect dairy farmers, from what I gather, from wild price fluctuations like those that we saw in 2009, which was not a great year for dairy in Wisconsin. Jim Holt, does the Farm Bureau support this piece of legislation, the Dairy Security Act?
Yes, we do. We've worked for quite a number of time with our representatives in Congress and the Ag committees to put forward or to continue to put forward ideas that would reform what our dairy policy has been. It's A good share of it was developed in the 40s, and we think it's long past time to change it and to move forward. It does eliminate the price support system of the government buying product and storing it. We think that's an excellent move. It also eliminates the milk income loss contract program that was in place that did assist in some ways the dairy farmers in that real challenging year of 2009. But we think the proposed changes have a lot of potential to bring the dairy industry into a new day and carry it forward in a process by which government has less influence but yet still provides a safety net when necessary.
So if it eliminates start first with the milk program, the MILC program, if it's eliminating that, what is supposed to replace it? Is it more crop insurance kind of an idea?
Well, it's an insurance product, yes, related that's similar in some ways to the crop insurance program. It provides a subsidized insurance program for farmers, a total subsidy at one level, and then an opportunity for partial subsidy at a higher level. It also includes what's being by some called the supply management program, mm-hmm. and that creates some heartburn for a number of people. We historically have been uncomfortable with supply management programs, but in the case of this one, we see the way the design of the insurance program is, it may be necessary to have that in place to prevent extreme overproduction in some cases. So.
Now, isn't this is this mandatory or voluntary for dairy farmers to be a part of?
It is voluntary, but if a farmer chooses to participate in the insurance side of the program, then they are required to produce in the what they call the market stabilization portion of the bill, and that is what some people would call a supply management program. So you have a choice to participate in the insurance side, which is subsidized by the government. Or if you choose not to, then you could still take action on your own to buy an insurance product, use different tools in the market to protect yourself, but you would not get any government assistance on those.
All right. And Kara Slaughter, the Farmers Union, what's their take on the Dairy Security Act?
Wisconsin Farmers Union has some very serious reservations about the Dairy Security Act. The first concern is that it would eliminate the milk income loss contract program.
What's the danger there?
That program was one factor, was a saving grace, really, in 2009 for Wisconsin dairy farmers. As hard as 2009 was, and we can't overstate how difficult 2009 was for dairy farmers, many lost up to 50% of the equity in their farm. That crisis would have been far worse if not for the MILC program. And the wisdom of the MILC program is that it only kicks in when prices are low. Contrast that with the Dairy Security Act, which requires farmers to pay in an insurance program regardless of where prices are. So that's the first difference. And the second key difference, and something that's very important to understand about the Wisconsin dairy industry, is that in contrast with other major dairy-producing states like California, Wisconsin farmers, by and large, produce their own feed. And that's an important and unique feature of Wisconsin dairy production. We have cropland acres that are tied in with the dairy cows that are producing the milk. The Dairy Security Act, in its very nature, contemplates a production system where feed is being purchased from off the farm. It's designed to work for a California-style dairy where feed is purchased rather than produced by the farm. And again, as hard as 2009 was for Wisconsin dairy farmers, it was even worse in California. And so the danger that we see with the Dairy Security Act is, number one, it's the elimination of a program that works well for Wisconsin dairies, the milk income loss contract program. And number two, it's designed with a type of production system that doesn't fit well with what we see in Wisconsin, and that what Wisconsin dairy farmers are doing is managing their own risk by the nature of their operation. If you produce your own feed, you're managing the risk that the price of feed will fluctuate dramatically, and that's what we've seen in the past couple of years. Corn prices are very, very high. If you're producing your own feed, you're in a much better situation to mitigate that risk yourself. And so Wisconsin farmers are managing risk already, and this Dairy Security Act basically penalizes a farmer for doing that internal risk mitigation and shifts the burden to the government to manage that risk.
So why do you think it was included in the in the Senate's version of the Farm Bill? Do you think it was just an attempt to get rid of programs and just cut?
I think there was a universal feeling at the end of 2009 and 2010 that something needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And in that context of a search for answers, one of the groups that emerged was the National Milk Producers Federation. And they created what is now the Dairy Security Act. The program that they were forwarding was called Foundation for the Future. And to be honest, it was the most cogent, well-packaged dairy reform proposal that was out there in the market. It gained a lot of traction, and I think people jumped on board because it was the solution that was out there.
All right, and Jim Holtz, any response to that?
Well, I think Kara's right that 2009 was probably the ugliest year for dairy farmers for a long time, and there was a great deal of equity lost. MLIC did assist, but there was still, as she said, a great deal of equity lost, which drove a lot of interest in developing a different way to address the situation. And that is what kind of became the result with the insurance product, that where farmers would have the opportunity to cover a $4 margin totally paid for by the U.S. government through the dairy program, and then an up to an $8 margin by participating in the cost of that program. So they had some options. They had the option to be a part of it or not be a part of it. And then in the end, if they were a part of it and we did have an overproduction, there was a market stabilization portion which would then require each of those producers to participate in reducing the supply. Certainly no program is perfect. They all have their pluses and minuses. But we saw this as a major change in responsibility of the producer himself to make those decisions how it best fit them, and at the same time allowed producers to be in or out and to benefit or be penalized according to their own decisions, which we think is the basis of all American industry is free enterprise. And we think a closer return to those principles is a positive thing.
All right, you're listening to a special joint edition of WPR Regional Programs, The West Side and Route 51. I'm Rich Kramer, and thanks for joining us. We're talking about the Senate's passage of their version of the 2012 Farm Bill and what kind of a response might be coming from the U.S. House and what it all means for farmers in Wisconsin. We'd like to hear from you, the listener. Give us a call at 800-228-5615, 1-800-228-5615. Phone lines are wide open. And Jim Holtz, I'm going to go back to you. I read an article written by Ron Curran. Curran, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But this article says that the Dairy Security Act has two fatal flaws. One, the activated margin protection plan provides incentives that will increase production, activating the Security Act's supply management segment. I'm still fuzzy on what all that means. But second, he says that supply and price have a weak correlation, meaning that the market stabilization segment of all this will fail to increase prices.
I think he identified one of the major concerns we as an organization also have, and is that with the insurance products that are available, we see the potential for almost guaranteeing a profit to a producer. And therefore, the question would come how maybe the level of subsidization needs to be changed. Because if you get to the point of guaranteeing a profit, good managers will see that. They will devise their operation to capture that. And that's the only reason why we have supported the market stabilization portion, because we saw that risk, that danger of too much encouragement to produce without enough holding back. So we think there's more work to be done on this. Maybe the House side will come up with a better style program. We still do basically support the basic concepts, but we think there's some alterations that could come forward.
And as you said, no plan is perfect. There's all kinds of different angles to look at things and from different perspectives. Kara Slaughter, what about these fatal flaws? And or do you agree with this Ron Curran that these are two bad parts of this bill?
The second that you mentioned is especially important, that there's a weak correlation between prices and supply in the market. That's one of the real challenges in dairy policy. And what that points to is that there's heavy concentration in the dairy industry. We don't have a market that functions on traditional supply and demand principles. What that means is when we have many producers, few buyers, and that creates the opportunity for market manipulation and producers getting paid less than they would otherwise receive if there were many buyers in the market. One of the interesting phenomena in the dairy industry as well is that when prices for consumers go up, very rarely do producers see that increase in prices. So that gets to a bigger issue, which is antitrust. And in 2010, the Department of Justice and the USDA had a historic series of hearings throughout the country focused on antitrust issues in agriculture. And in Wisconsin, we've seen the Department of Justice take action against Dean Foods when a merger would have created a near monopoly in school lunch markets. And we really applaud those efforts and encourage more of those at the federal level. That's something that is touched upon in the Farm Bill through efforts to address concentration and anti-competitive behavior. I think, like Jim, we think that farmers, given a fair market, can compete well, and U.S. farmers produce as well as any country in the world. But that's all predicated on the existence of a fair market, and the disconnect between prices and supply in the dairy market is a clear indicator that we do not have competitive markets in the dairy industry.
Jim Holt, what do you say to that?
Well, a lot of the points that Kara made are, I think, we agree with. We do want to recognize, though, that as a farmer is a producer of a product, he also needs to be a marketer of a product. And over time, there has developed a system by which a farmer can participate in the marketing of his product using futures markets. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of tools within those markets that farmers have the opportunity to use. Yes, it requires their effort to understand those markets, to learn about them, and learn how they can use them. But I think that's a basic concept of business, is that's your responsibility as a business owner and a business person to understand the markets that you've developed, that you're producing for. We have some similar concerns about the inelasticity of demand for milk products. That means that as the amount of products available on the market goes up a small amount, the price goes down a large amount. That concept and that relationship has been in there in place in this market for a long time, and it has resulted in some challenging times to the dairy industry every number of years. A third point that we need to consider and realize that is in flux all the time is how does the U.S. participate in trade with its dairy products? When we are able to export a significant amount of our product from 10 to 15% to other parts of the world, we almost always do very well as a dairy producer in this country. When trade markets are closed to us or when world situations limits that, we are stressed. And that's what one of the things that happened back in 2009. So we think, along with the dairy bill, there needs to be a good balance of trade policies in place. We continue to support different opportunities to create trading relationships with other countries in the world to reduce tariffs. Because as Kara said, we're very good at producing dairy products here. We produce a very high quality product, and we can produce with anybody in the world if we aren't kept by barriers from other countries.
Now, Kara, I want to ask you. I remember reading an article about, I believe it was a trade deal with Korea, where the Farmers Union wasn't in support of that, or am I thinking of something else?
We had a serious concern about that because of currency manipulation. And when we reduce – part of the deal with trade barriers is that in exchange for other countries reducing their trade barriers, we do the same. One of the one of the points that Farmers Union would emphasize is that we evaluate trade deals based not only on the potential for us to export more, but also analyzing how much imports are going to increase. What we saw with NAFTA is that although our agricultural exports did increase, our imports actually increased far more. Mm. And this was to the detriment of U.S. farmers. And in the case of the Korean trade agreement, the concern on the part of Farmers Union was that Korea had a history of manipulating currency values. And when that occurs, a country can make their agricultural exports artificially less expensive and flood the U.S. market with those commodities. It was essential that that Korea free trade agreement include strong provisions about currency manipulation. Our objection was that the version that was proposed and eventually was passed, unfortunately, did not include strong prohibitions on currency manipulation. And so we're concerned that U.S. products will not fare well vis-a-vis Korean products because of currency manipulation.
All right. And with that, we're talking about the Senate version of the 2012 Farm Bill and about the 2012 Farm Bill in general, and what it means for farmers in Wisconsin, whether it's central Wisconsin to our friends over in the Wausau area or western Wisconsin to our friends in the Chippewa Valley and beyond. Give us a call at 800-228-5615. That's 1-800-228-5615. If you'd like to get in on this discussion with our guests, Jim Holtz, of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and Kara Slaughter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Now, with that, I wanted to go back to the food stamps issue. And for a lot of people, I think, that aren't familiar with the Farm Bill, that they might not know that that is such a significant part of this trillion-dollar bill. And currently, some stats that I saw, 46 million people receive some type of food stamps, food assistance in the U.S. for a cost about $80 billion. And under the Senate version, the Senate version of the Farm Bill promises to tighten up the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP, by ending misuse by college students, cracking down on retailers, et cetera, et cetera. Is this going far enough with trying to pare down the cost of that program?
That's a challenging question, and I don't have an obvious answer. Government programs on the food stamp side and food assistance are large and complicated. And to be honest, I don't have a clear understanding of them or what the requirements are. If there is fraud taking place or misappropriation of funds taking place, obviously I think that should change.
Yeah.
To quantify it, I really am not able to.
Well, here's a question that just me throwing it out there. Should this kind of program be taken out of the Farm Bill, or should it be a standalone kind of a thing?
It depends on who you ask that question of, because everybody is concerned with their particular profession and having a government face on that profession. They're in the Department of Agriculture at the national level. A lot of those people are food stamp people, employees. And so if you cut that all away, then the Department of Agriculture seems smaller and maybe not as important. So
sure.
that concerns some people in agriculture. But we do stand the risk of being associated with that large trillion-dollar cost to farmers that really is not accurate. And so it kind of cuts both ways, and it's hard to have a clear opinion on that.
That's interesting. Kara Slaughter.
Senator Ron Johnson proposed just that, mm-hmm. to separate nutrition programs from the farm safety net programs. That measure was defeated in the Senate. Our farmers, our members, I think most farmers, I think most people in the state make the connection between what farmers do and what people eat. Mm. And I think in part, at least, the reason that our members get up at 5 a.m. to go milk cows, make hay in 100-degree heat, go out there to the barn in the snow, is because they feed people. And that's important to them. So we're very troubled at the idea of separating nutrition programs from agricultural programs. We think they go hand in hand. And the proposal to cut out fraud absolutely from food stamp programs, but the cuts that were made to the SNAP program on the Senate, $4 billion, are a mere shadow of the cuts that are likely to take place on the House side. Mm. Those are probably going to be in excess of $13 billion in cuts. It's important to remember that 50% of the beneficiaries of food stamps are children. It's also important to remember that the reason that we are seeing an increase in food stamp use right now is high unemployment and an economic downturn. It's always the case that food stamp use goes up when the economy goes down.
All right. With that, we're going to go to the phone lines. We've got our first caller of the evening, and Ken in Chippewa County is on the line. Also, a reminder that anyone else can call in if you've got questions or comments for either of our guests, Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation or Kara Slaughter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. And now we go to Ken. Ken, you're on the line, on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. Hello. Hello there, Kara, Jim, and Rich. Hey. See, this farm bill does not have any floor price like we might talk about before, where they have a base price for the milk. And as it is, the USDA shows there's a cost of producing milk of about an average of $25 a hundred for milk. Yet right now, farmers are only getting about $16 a hundred for the milk. They had a little bit of a better price last year, up to about $21. And all of a sudden, they're saying, oh boy, it's a windfall for farmers. You know, farmers' income is the greatest in decades. Man, oh man, they're getting all kinds of money. But we lost a lot of money. You know, like in the years 2009 and 2010, farmers lost about $20 billion in equity. We're nowhere near back to even getting that equity back. And around here, with this low price for milk, we're losing our dairy farmers, smaller dairy farmers. And we're getting surrounded by corn and soybeans. Corn going for ethanol in Stanley, Wisconsin, and then soybeans going for oil and so on. But we're in bad shape. We really are. And we need a better floor price. We should have a support price instead of $9.60. You know, get that up more reasonably where it should be, up around $20 a hundred. Our buying power for milk shows that compared to 1948, we should be getting over $50 a hundred for milk in order to have the purchasing power.
Mm. Well, Ken, thanks so much for the question or the comment actually, and I'll put that to Jim Holtz first. Jim, you used to be a dairy farmer yourself, correct?
Yes, I dairied for about 21 years. And Ken makes some good points that it is a challenging job. It's hard work. You have to enjoy doing it to do well at it. I probably would disagree with Ken in some ways, because if we were to again institute a guaranteed price by the government at $20 or somewhat higher, we would see a flood of milk on the market that we could in no way handle. I understand his frustration at times, but yet the reality is that other parts of the world can produce that for much less than $20, as we apparently can because we keep on producing. But as the price has the opportunity to go up and down with market forces, it leaves a much better opportunity for our producers across this entire country to make a good living at dairy and farming. So I disagree with Ken about establishing a price floor at that kind of a level.
Go ahead, Ken.
You know, I had the proposal, and I've written about it already a number of times after having been writing letters for 20-some years already, that if every day we collected information on how much milk was produced every day, then that next day we could find out or determine how much is needed. And in order to control supply, we could leave an equal percentage of milk on every farm that we really don't need. Something that could be manufactured into a problem. So I do have a solution, and that would be that all of us would have to voluntarily, whatever, just keep some of that milk on the farm to maintain a price that's profitable. Don't make it into something that causes a problem.
All right. Kara Slaughter would like to weigh in here. Go ahead, Kara.
Ken is really onto something with the need for more frequent dairy product reporting. And in fact, Senator Casey from Pennsylvania introduced an amendment to the Senate Farm Bill that was passed 73-26 to require dairy processing plants to report their volumes more frequently. The benefit of doing that is that we have a more accurate assessment of how much dairy product we have on the market, and that in turn goes into the dairy pricing formula that affects what farmers receive. There's no reason that we shouldn't have that kind of price reporting. Every plant knows what its output is every day, and we have electronic means of communication to send that information to the USDA. So we really look for the House to pass a farm bill on the House side that includes more frequent dairy price reporting as well.
All right. Any final thoughts, Jim?
I would agree that reporting of the volumes is it's good information for all farmers to have, all people in the business. I still am a little bit reluctant to agree with Ken. Most of us that produced milk did it to the best of our abilities, and it's pretty hard not to deliver that product to the market. I don't know what you do if you keep it in the farm, to be honest with you. But it continues to need to be a market where producers market what they produce. There needs to be a responsibility with the producer not to rely on a government program to determine their destiny. And so that's probably a position we'll probably stay pretty strong with.
Kara Slatta.
This really gets to, I think, two different philosophies in how you approach dairy policy or how you approach farm policy in general. So there's a let the market decide approach, and then there's another approach that says, and in fact, the reason that we have the kind of dairy policy and government intervention in dairy policy that we do is a recognition that dairy products are highly perishable. They're seasonal, more so in the past than they used to be. There's what's called the spring flush. And so there's a flood of product going out onto the market when new calves are born in the spring. It tapers off, even though demand for dairy products is pretty consistent throughout the year. So there are some factors that are unique about dairy that call for some intervention. It's also hard to transport as a perishable product. So the alternative, rather than assuming that the market is just going to handle all of these challenges, is to have a base price, like Ken was talking about, coupled with a mechanism to manage supply that says, let's get together and talk about how we make sure that we're not flooding the market so that prices stay reasonable, people stay in business, and we support farm families.
All right. With that, hey, Ken, thanks so much for calling and for sharing your thoughts on the Dairy Security Act or just how government should interact with the dairy in general. And with that, we're going to take our final break here on the special edition of the regional programs on Wisconsin Public Radio, being the West Side and Route 51. We'll be right back to wrap up some discussion on the Farm Bill and what the House might be doing, and also a quick look at the at how the weather has been affecting crops in the state. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to a special joint edition of Wisconsin Public Radio's regional programs, the West Side and Route 51. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about the Senate's passage of their version of the 2012 Farm Bill and what the response might be from the U.S. House, what it means for farmers in Wisconsin. I'm joined in studio by Kara Slaughter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union and Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. And we'd like to hear from our listeners. Give us a call at 800-228-5615. If you've got a quick question or a comment about the Farm Bill or about farming in general for either of our guests, give us a call, 800-228-5615. Now, I just saw something today, I believe, on the House Committee on Agriculture. They're releasing some kind of bullet points, some boiled-down version of what they would like to see in the Farm Bill. Kara Slaughter, it looks like they want to make some cuts to conservation programs, and I know that's a big issue for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. What do you think when you see the House looking to, and again, this is just a committee version, so it can change, of course, very much, but they're looking to cut the conservation programs nearly in half from 23 to 13, I believe, and that equals to about $6 billion cut from that program, these programs. What are your thoughts?
It's troubling, and it's out of sync with what farmers say that they want. 86% of farmers think that funding for conservation programs should be maintained or increased. And so it's troubling to see their elected representatives proposing to do just the opposite. And one of the things that we know is that conservation actually helps farmers' bottom line. When farmers conserve their soil, when they use nutrients judiciously, those sound conservation practices also result in sound economics on farms. But those conservation programs can be a big help in getting farmers the technical assistance that they need in order to implement conservation measures, things like planting trees, improving drainage in a barnyard, bear fruit not only for farmers but also for local tourism, fishing, water recreation. And so those cuts to conservation programs we think are really penny-wise, pound-foolish.
And Jim Holt, any thoughts on the cuts to conservation programs or any other parts of the bullet points that were released by the committee today?
We as well are concerned by those level of proposed cuts. I believe the Senate bill came with about a $4 billion cut proposed on the conservation programs that seemed to be mostly putting some programs together and streamlining some, which seemed to bear some merit. Maybe there's some more changing need to be done, but I think the numbers that you used that I have not seen yet, if those are accurate, that seems to be a bit excessive. And farmers are conservationists. They always have been. They've always loved their land and wanted to take care of it. So I think we're a little concerned about that report and would like to look into it farther.
All right. And have you any things that you like in the House version bill or
so much is up to debate yet. I mean, it's in the committee yet, and they're reacting to things in the Senate bill that was passed. So in general, we think there's a lot of potential in the Senate bill, and most of the concepts that are there we're going to support in the House side as well.
And very quickly, one of the things that I saw, and this is a printout that I got from the House Committee on Agriculture, their bill provides regulatory relief, is a big push in the House lately in all different manners of government, but including H.R. 872 to mitigate burdens placed on our nation's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. 872 relates to a provision that, and one part of it was that no permit be needed for discharge of pesticides from a point source into navigable waters. Are you familiar with that, Jim Holt?
There's a big discussion on what the definition of navigable waters is and how the implementation of the Clean Water Act is going to go forward. There's been proposed legislation last two or three sessions, that was never adopted. And now the administration's kind of doing an end run and trying to do it just through administrative rule from the EPA. Mm-hmm. There's a great deal of concern because it essentially is the U.S. government wanting to take control of all waters, whether they're a stream that runs across your barnyard when it rains or a stream that runs across your yard next to your house when it rains. We think it's excessive. We think there are some excellent provisions in the current Clean Water Act that protect water, and we ought to continue with those. But we see a big flag, red flag in this direction the EPA has been taking.
And Kara Slaughter, are you familiar with this, the H.R. 872 and what the House is looking to do to basically mitigate some burdens placed on our farmers?
I think it is, as Jim described, and it may be a little bit of a turf war between the EPA and Congress about who gets to make that call.
Definitely has been a lot of discussion, a lot of debate over the EPA's role coming from the House. Now we've got 2 minutes, and let's talk about weather. We've seen incredible heat for about a week now, a little bit longer. Jim Holt, you raise corn and I believe soybeans too?
Yep.
What is this doing to your grains?
Well, we're certainly concerned, but yet we got a big break the other night. I think it was early Monday morning. We got about 6 or 7 tenths that came through that took the edge off at that time. And
that's here in western Wisconsin.
Right, and yet I have a number of friends that farm throughout this state that have not been as fortunate, and their crop is quickly deteriorating to a point where it's a very serious issue. And some of my, I would unfortunately say, are probably beyond coming back at this point.
Really?
It's a part of the risk of our business, and it's incumbent upon us to understand that and to take measures to use products to mitigate that risk. And it's not pretty sometimes, but It's a fact of life with farming.
And products meaning what?
Insurance products. Okay. There's all sorts of risk products. Yes.
Okay. Curious letter?
This drought or lack of rain is a precise demonstration of why we so need the Farm Bill to be passed this year, because we have programs that will expire on September 30th of this year, including permanent disaster programs. And one of the messages I think that both Farm Bureau and Farmers Union have emphasized to our members of Congress is we need to get a Farm Bill passed this year, and we're really looking to the House to make those changes.
All right. With that, we're going to have to end the program. Thank you both so much. Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, Kara Slaughter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, thank you so much. Thanks to our partners over in Wausau for helping us simulcast this program. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.